We're back. I'm Paula Gordon, Bill Russell, Liz Thomas, Elizabeth Marshall Thomas. The Marshall part is always there for me. It is a Liz Thomas, but the Elizabeth Marshall Thomas. Your parents, do the short course on how in the world a 19-year-old Liz and her brother John at 18, how you end up in the Kalahari, for goodness sake, when you're full-blooded American kids.
Well, my dad was a civil engineer and also started a business, but he retired at about that time.
And he
I think it was about 1950 that he retired. And he wanted to do something with his family. And he was the kind of person that, had he lived at another time, would have not wanted to see the smoke of his neighbor's chimney. He liked to be where people were.
And needed some distance.
He needed some distance, and he loved the out of doors. He was very much a naturalist. It isn't that he knew so much about. I mean, he knew what kind of tree it was you were looking at, but he wasn't one of these real naturalists. But he just loved I think he got it from hunting when he was younger. He had friends in the Mi'kmaq Nation who he hunted with. I think he went hunting. He never said he hunted, but he knew how to talk about moose in Mi'kmaq. And he was a dead shot.
Sign.
He was a dead shot. My Lord, he could take a rifle and see something in the distance, bang, and the thing would fall over. We'd go get the meat. And I took that for granted. But as I look back, with a little bit more sophistication, I know he did some hunting, but he never talked about it. My mother was an animal lover and protected all animals and would not have liked to think of him hunting. And he certainly didn't hunt after we were born. But he could.
Yeah, well, and that ended up being important.
It was important, yeah.
When I mean,
it was. You'll never starve if you're with him. And yeah. No.
So you're in the 50s and he retires.
He retires, and so he wanted to do this. He looked on a map. He wanted to go where there was. He wanted to go where there was nothing on the map. And back then, there were unexplored parts of the world. I mean, the Bushmen had been there for
maybe
5 million to 35,000, somewhere in there. I mean, you know, a while.
Yes.
They knew it, but for non-Bushmen, it was unexplored. Unexplored by non-Bushmen. I think this is even true of Bantu people. They weren't in there, and they don't seem to be. I mean, there's a little disagreement in the anthropological world about whether there were Bantu people. It's that's kind of a long story and no point in getting into it, but there was no evidence that there ever had been,
and it was a big part of the map.
120,000 square miles, I would say, a huge area, and the old sites, the dwelling sites where people lived when we met them, went back really long. Some archaeological work was done there, and they went back 30,000 years, perhaps more. The one that I know about didn't get to the bottom. They discontinued it.
So if you hadn't gone to the Kalahari, what were the kinds of other places that your dad looked at?
Well, he was looking at Tasmania also. This inner Tasmania was also blank on the map. But we just tossed it. My brother kind of like read a book about Africa and liked Africa, and we kind of thought, my dad, I guess, thought to go there, so we did, and he organized an expedition, and we went, and we spent a long time trying to find people because there's not much water. The water is in small water holes, little places where a spring comes out of the rocks, usually at the edges of seasonal lakes, which during the rainy season have soaked it up, and the rocks have caught it. So if there's a pool there, and some of them were permanent and some of them weren't, but there were very few, and people would have to be associated with them in the dry season. In the rainy season, they could be anywhere, but nobody knew where these were. They were vague ideas about where some of them were.
So you didn't just go check into a motel.
No.
call up Bob's Guide Service. And, well, you say nobody knew. The Bushmen, of course, did know.
Oh, yeah, they knew everyone. I mean, there were no maps. So none of us, when I say nobody, right. It meant nobody on our side of things really knew where they were or had any idea.
How many are we talking about when you say the Bushmen? Are there, is this big numbers? Are we talking about millions of people in this unmapped by Europeans? How's that?
I was once told, I mean, somebody once came up with a figure of roughly, nobody knew how many people there were. And to this day, I don't think anybody really knows how many people there were. I would say, I mean, I think somebody suggested 20,000, and that does not seem out of reason to me. The population density was calculated at one person for 9 square miles or one person for 10 square miles.
And these are the first people.
These would be
first
only Bushmen, first people, yeah.
And there are all sorts of subtleties that go around that people can explore reading the old way themselves if they want to know the particulars. But it's important to say not only did you not know what was there, you didn't know who was there or how
That's
to
right.
find them.
That's
and
right.
this is big country.
And it's big country.
And it's not particularly welcoming to someone who's not native to that country. It looked pretty... I walked into the Harvard Peabody Museum with you once and saw this image, and you said, that's what it looked like. Oh, my goodness!
Yes, very dry. Well, it wasn't a desert with just sand. It had its own ecosystem, its own kinds of plants, and plenty of them. I mean, a very varied, but it was a dry ecosystem. And most of the year, and it expected to be. I mean, so it was doing well the way it was. Even the animals, even the birds and birds, even all the vertebrates, there were even amphibians. But they would, I mean, to show the length of time, they would sleep through the dry part and then come out when it rained, start being active when it rained, and then they go back to sleep for a long, long time. And so it was really, but go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I was telling a friend that we were going to be talking about lots of things, including the stories you tell in the old way, and that I thought he would find it riveting. And he said, oh, you mean there's something to be learned in it? I said, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And part of it is your elegant first couple of chapters in setting the predicates for what kind of animal we are. To me, perhaps the great liberation in my life is to be, I mean, truly, the great liberation is to be able to think in Darwinian terms about the human animal. Isn't that an awesome gift to be given? And then to have lived it and walked it and talked it and your mother recording it and your brother filming it and you writing about it over the course of 50 years? Isn't that just astonishing?
Yes. It is to me, and it was a great piece of luck that we, I mean, it was huge good fortune that we were able to do that and also to be there when there was no trace. I mean, later anthropologists came and they worked in areas where there were dogs and cattle and so forth. There were plenty of Bushmen, but anthropologists don't know. They know so little about the natural world, and it doesn't occur to them that if there are dogs, this may be having an effect on the other animals, which in turn will be having an effect on the people and the kind of luck they find when they go hunting, that sort of thing. If they have cattle, that will affect the natural world. It will affect the lions, and it could, and it did. But so without any of that, We were able to see an ecosystem in which there were no domestic animals, no domestic plants, just our people, human beings, as part of it. And this is with no introduction of anything later, no agriculture, no pastoralism, no nothing. And that's what I think was so valuable and why we were so lucky.
There's a Spartanness to this space. Mm-hmm. In a lush environment, you have, I mean, there's more latitude for living. In this kind of environment, everybody in it, and I'm thinking from this evolutionary standpoint, the margins are so thin that if you're not very, very well adapted to that particular, mm-hmm. not only the immediate environment, but the cycle of the environment, water and not water, the niches are very clear, it would seem, and the adaptations are in some ways, from our standpoint, as compared to a lush environment, are it would seem very clear that you have to have this kind of, you have to be able to deal with the absence of water.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Let Liz think about that for just a moment. We'll go away and come right back so I don't have to interrupt you as you begin to respond to this this line of inquiry. We're with Elizabeth Marshall Thomas. We are pleased to be in Peterborough, New Hampshire, being here. Bill Russell, I, Paula Gordon. You be with us when we return in a moment.